with Steve Beck.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com, still at Keeneland, one last morning to put this Odyssey, this portion anyway, behind us. And of course, the sale action will continue through next week, through next Wednesday. Yesterday, session one, book two, and plenty of active trade, a couple of more seven-figure sellers, and there's no reason why today might not produce a few more, because yesterday, the infoal First Samurai mare, Sweet Sammy D, she sold for $1 million to Pin Oak, and Jane Lyon. I've been trying to get Jane to visit, but she's obviously fully involved in what's going on in the sale. She bought Park Avenue, the four-year-old quality road mare, not mare even, filly, at $1,450,000. So that was hip 478, and listed as a crossover, could be straight to the breeding shed. Last seen for John Sadler, and this one of those Aronis. I asked Costa about Edgeway, but here was Park Avenue, and last seen in September. So we'll see what Jane Lyon does. Maybe she'll bring Park Avenue back for a five-year-old season, and this one, you may recall, earlier in the year at Lone Star, won the Ouija board. And actually, she only got, moved to the grass this year after starting her career on the dirt and including a grade three placement in the La Cañada. So those were two seven-figure sellers, and Jane, you've got to figure, Jane Lyon's got a little bit of money to spend under the circumstance, and we'll see where else the bloodstock flows. The conversation with really three days, the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday recap, and we obviously on Monday with Sid Fernando got really a primer on how the flight line share worked. And I really appreciate it's kind of gratifying, really, where I saw a number of Twitter users correcting some people, including Darren Ravel, about how the finances worked and the premium nature of this share, etc. But we'll get, I think, some more beneath the surface storylines from Christy DeBernardis of the Thoroughbred Daily News, and she and Jessica Martini having a little breakfast before they make their way over to the sales grounds. Absolutely, even a nicer day again this morning in Lexington than yesterday. Was cold. It was 40 yesterday in the morning, and it's warmer today. And it's funny because things were supposed to get more seasonal this week after the fabulous weather we retreated to, really, over Breeders' Cup. And I will mention one funny thing as we get going. We're going to get Dick Powell in here very quickly, and we'll get Dick's recap, and we'll do some action Hong Kong with Dick. But I want to get his Breeders' Cup recapping. I noticed one thing, and maybe I'm overstating it, but it's almost as if all the trees in the area were given instructions not to let their leaves drop until everybody left town. it was, as a few different people had remarked, that you know, that this first week in November, the trees are supposed to be bare and it's supposed to be, you know, cold and et cetera. And driving in this morning, I noticed all of a sudden every tree has shed its leaves. So it was, it literally was like the Chamber of Commerce and Keeneland told the trees, just hang on to those leaves until the clocks turn back. Maybe it was that hour. The clocks turned back and the trees doffed their leaves. So it is funny to, you know, every morning here now, there's this army of landscapers trying to literally wrangle every leaf on the ground. It seems like a difficult task, an assignment. It just made me laugh this morning. We have got Dick to visit with, and I think Christy, actually, of the two, I think Christy is going to join us because she's the one who answered the text. Yesterday morning was a little harrowing. Later, Seth Merrill, of course, it's Wednesday. We'll talk to Seth. We talked to Sid, right? I'll check with Sid, see if he's got anything to add. Maybe we'll get just a half session in with Sid for his reaction to the $4.6 million Flightline share that he really framed beautifully. I will make another aside since we're wading into the morning. It's quite something that some people think that they're just entitled. Why does anybody think that there's some imperative to knowing who the Brookdale client is that bought the share? There's undisclosed clients buying all the time. Their money, their purchase, their prerogative. I saw just some preposterous posturing that somehow there's something there's what something clandestine. I mean, it's just amazing. Horses are purchased all the time by people who aren't in a position at the moment to have the microphone stuck in their face. Same thing's true. Lottery winners, you know, lottery winners, they don't come forward every, you know, immediately. I don't get it. I mean, it's all the time you see quotes, so-and-so for an undisclosed client. Nobody goes off the deep end about it. Whoever this is, will, when he or they are ready to talk about their goals and ambitions in the business, they'll reveal themselves, and Sid will write about it. Garrett O'Rourke this morning from Judmont, and it's a two-pronged conversation with Garrett because there's Elite Power's win to discuss, but mentioned this the other morning to Sid. Right away on Sunday, one of the things that we noticed was both Judmont and Sheikh Hamdan's daughter, Shadwell, buying mares, and that is super encouraging. Nobody wants those two enterprises to, you know, to fade away. I mean, sometimes we understand, you know, patriarchs and matriarchs pass, and you know, their legacy is, you know, what they built, but bloodstock gets distributed, and we don't, you know, we don't get to see them anymore. Losing Shadwell, and certainly it's quite something, actually. I mean, this has been a parallel conversation. In fact, Dick maybe can even touch on it. It's been a parallel conversation since the proximity of their deaths, of Sheikh Hamdan and Prince Khalid. So looking forward to talk. Always a pleasure to talk to Garrett O'Rourke, which makes me actually, I think I did retweet it. Everybody did see, I haven't had a chance to talk about this, Shark Hanlon bringing the Grand National winner, bringing Herrick into the pub in Ireland. Did you also see the very funny video that somebody edited where he's trying to listen to Shark talk about his background and the hurling contest and basically unable to decipher, you know, the brogue. It is very funny. I know I did retweet it, but I forgot to mention it the other day. I've gone back to watch. I'm pretty sure I bookmarked it because it is very funny. He mimes Rich Migliori and Maggie from the broadcast, and then cuts in. He cut and pasted it. Very clever. That's the one fun part about when Twitter's funny. It's very funny. It's pretty funny last night, actually. I was quietly confident about yesterday, and knock on wood, democracy lives to fight another day. There's something I'm missing here. We're expecting, I'm hoping, that the Todd Fletcher joins us in hour three today as well. All right, so that's part of the lineup. See if there's anything I can add to this. Churchill, in fact, KK just put out the scratches. Churchill's got a little pick four later that I ended up printing out. I sometimes I don't rush right back to play after Breeders' Cup, but I'm here. and I got to head over to Louisville after the show later today. So maybe, you know, why not? So we'll see if Seth, I bet you Seth has looked at this. It's the leading, that and Indy today seem like the leading opportunities. They will draw the claiming crown today for Saturday. And we'll certainly give claiming crown a big push as it comes to Churchill. And we talked about it last week with Eric Hamelbeck. The other piece of news, Breeders' Cup related, you saw the final assessment about the three-quarter, the six-furlong, the beam, and you know, I mean, everybody knew the 107 was wrong, it was because the outrider was, you know, riding to attend to Epicenter. That's exactly what happened. And so after considerable work with the timer and basically, you know, using video editing equipment, the corrected appropriate three-quarter time was 109.27, 109.1. And it, you know, well, with it was in a, within a tick, within a little less than half a second of the first guess at it of 109.62. But the official corrected time is going to be 109.27. Epicenter situation, by the way, fine. Under the circumstances, post surgery, a very positive report yesterday. Again. From Chad Brown regarding domestic spending. Very encouraging. And it looks like he's even going to be released, which actually, I was actually surprised that they were ready to, at Rude and Riddle, to let him go to the farm that Chad has in Kentucky. I mean, it's one of those things where he's got to be careful. I mean, you've got a fracture in the pelvic area, there's a lot of things that can go awry, as I mentioned the other day, including internal bleeding. So, but it seems like, again, knock on wood, everything's a go. So there's actually been nothing but positive developments from, I mean, the bleeding situation with Tyler's Tribe and Messier. I mean, that's going to take longer, you know, particularly Tyler's Tribe, because Tim Martin is going to, you know, treat him and is trying to find him hyperbaric chamber in proximity to where he's going to be the next little while. And Tim usually, I think, at Oaklawn. So that will take a wait and watch scenario. But there was a crisis potentially averted yesterday at Parks. And that was the 10th race, right? In the 10th, you had a bad spill and a couple of strewn jocks on the ground. And I sent out the note yesterday from Danny Gibson and Yaron Barbosa, the 5-pound bug, who really has been terrific. He's got 150 wins. And it ended up, he was on the favorite, Soupster, and it ended up okay, you know, roughed up. He and, well, I know Gomez was involved in this too, but I think it was the other bug, Ignacio, that went to the hospital. But both, they're unbelievable. I don't want to equate them with Timex ads of yesteryear, but they do take a licking and keep on ticking. Do the chocks. It's amazing. They hit the ground and they're right back at it. So again, some crises potentially averted. All right, let's reach for Dick in here so I can get. We got two things to do. Obviously, we've got his Breeders' Cup and assessment, but we also are going to talk to him about HK. We'll get an HK play for this morning. And our man Cheggers from Australasia, he popped a 10-1 on form to win already this morning. So we'll see what else Dick has in mind as we say good morning, Dick Powell.
Steve, good morning.
Dick.
The time zone difference now makes it difficult for live racing on Wednesday morning.
Well,
as they load in the gate for race day.
I probably should have run to you, you know, right off the break, but I've kind of waded into the action.
Yeah, and it's been fast action. The last race was almost a track record. Zach Parton has at least one win. Sylvester D'Souza is doing great. Luke Ferraris has a couple of wins. So track is fast, and they're down on the A course, so the rail is in the true position. And I need 5 or 6 in this race. 5's a big favorite.
Spontaneous, Savvy Delight, and Super Eagle. Super Axiom leads them to the 200 meters from Heroic Master, who's starting to charge now. He's let loose here by Burden, out wider on the track, trying to stay on as Spontaneous, but in the end, the favorite's going to be too strong. Heroic Master, Super Axiom, Special M, and not sure 4. They were swooping out wide.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. You got Heroic,
well, he was,
Heroic Master.
He was odds-on favorite. He had one start and was third. He had 2 wins internationally before he debuted in Hong Kong on October 5th. And based on that effort, he took a ton of money. So Heroic Master comes in, and he raced at 65. So he'll be moving up the class ladder, probably stay in this class, but higher weight. And another winner for Zach, and Frankie Law is also having a big meet for training. So Zach is just light years ahead of everybody. He had 3 winners Sunday. Sylvester D'Souza had 4 and 2 already today. Now, the problem with Sylvester is I expected him to do great, especially with Joe Marrero sidelined. But he's been suspended so many times. He can stay out of the penalty box. he'll win races in bunches because he's raced in Hong Kong before. This is all familiar to him. So for him to come back and do well, that's expected. But I think he kind of forgot how tightly run the races are. So he's been suspended a few times. He's out now. Big day last week, and now a big day today. Now, before I forget, looking ahead, besides the time zone change, we are racing Saturday, which means midnight Saturday night East Coast time, 9 o'clock Pacific time Friday night. So the races are a little earlier and a day earlier this week, highlighted by the Panasonic Cup going 1,400 meters. Right now we have 9 entered, 8 scheduled for the turf, 2 on the all-weather track for this Saturday night, Friday evening at shot 10. So we come up today, and then we're right back at it. So coming quickly, and then we really get into the stakes action the following week, where we'll probably see Golden 60 and a bunch of top horses prepping for their engagements in the Longines International races coming up in December. So racing, quality racing, and the stakes level is going to really tick up.
Very much. Dick, let me, before I ask you, because now we've got 20-something minutes, and I'll probably have to get to the visit with Christy DeBernardis, but give us your play in the ninth.
Play in the ninth? Well, I went deep. I had played a pick 3 earlier this evening. I like the 2-5 Elements. It'll be one of the favorites, Matthew Chadwick, riding for Frankie Law. Unfortunately, he has to carry 135 pounds. Then the lower weights, the 8 Gluck Racer, Zach Purton for Jamie Richards. That was 9-1 in the early betting. Solo wins the 9, taking money. Luke Ferraris riding for Casper Founds. And the 12, Global Harmony, has a couple of starts in Hong Kong, a couple of starts overseas where he had a win. Lyle Hewitson rides this one for David Hayes. First two starts over in Hong Kong, but just average a shot 10. Now he comes to Happy Valley, gets in light. He was taking money. I threw him in. So I would say go with the 8. That's the price. And then back him up with 2, 9, and 12 underneath an exactus. So I would go 8 win and then 2, 9, 12 over 8 in exactus.
Very good. 8, 2, 9, 12. All right. Dick, let's turn to your Breeders' Cup assessment and how you made out Friday and Saturday. And the first order of business is to say thank you again for your turf insights, which, you know, among the horses that made, you know, tons of sense was terrific. And, you know, that part. But pointing people toward Victoria Road in the juvenile turf really helped. Because even the Euro guests, and I'll include Nick Luck in that, were lukewarm about Victoria Road, and he was one of your 3.
Yeah, and one reason why I liked him was the 9 furlong soft turf race that he had coming in. And I'm thinking, well, there's not going to be any questions with stamina or anything like that. So I used him. I bet him. It was a real good weekend for me, especially on the turf. So that was one of them. And then Saturday, in Italian came through because she got out there and was run down by Tuesday. But I had both of them. Modern Games, Appleby said it was his best horse. He was right. And then Rebel's Romance was another one that I liked. Was happy to get almost 6-1 on him. And he just ran fantastic. And that angle of being a gelding and not racing in some of the big races applied last year with one of Appleby's 2-year-olds. Couldn't run in a Dewhurst. came to Canada instead. And this one he raced in Germany, fit, ready, turned phone. When I saw the white cap get out, he had a little pressure on his outside. I don't know if he bullied his way out. But James Doyle got him in the clear, and it looked like Tonawa, you know, at Keeneland last time. Just whoosh. I mean, he already has the lead by the eighth pole. He's a gelding. I can't imagine how big he would be had he not been gelded, because he has a massive neck on him. And he's now a really fascinating horse, because he started out as a dirt horse. He won the UAE Derby in 2021. And then a couple things went awry, and they put him on turf, son of Dubawi, And he hasn't been beaten on it. He's 5-5 on turf. Now a Group 1 winner on it. And yet, those big Middle East dirt race purses are sitting there staring him in the face. So I don't know what they're going to do with him, but he was just terrific. And part of it is, and I think I read Jerry Brown write this. I don't handicap horses. I handicap races. And when you look at the races and you look at our horses, our turf horses, if they're not five lengths behind, let's say this was not the greatest group of Europeans, they're still three lengths behind. I mean, it was not enough to make up the gap, no matter what they sent over. So I go into the races with that in mind. Aiden and Appleby are just magnificent teams with unbelievable talented people working for them. They ship, they go anywhere. They, you know, just it's all clockwork for them. So Aiden had a huge Breeders' Cup. Charlie Appleby had a huge Breeders' Cup. And the other thing that I mentioned on the show last week, and unfortunately, I thought the horse that was going to do it was going to be Frank's Roquette, and she did not. But then I said Mott was very confident, and Mott was very confident because he had two Breeders' Cup winners, a second in the Classic, and a winner in the 12th race. So Bill Mott had a gigantic Breeders' Cup for himself, and ran second in the Classic to Flightline. Here's my issue with the people that are doing the hot takes. Oh, the secretary ran 21 times. This one did this. This one did that. So what that argument says is no one can come along today and be as good as anyone from years ago.
Good point.
Because no one today is going to run 21 times, you know, do all the things that horses of yesteryear did. So you can't take a horse today and say, wow, he's as good as anyone I've ever seen. And clearly he is. He might be better. I mean, in that race, the Pacific Classic was 10 furlongs of Flavian trying to settle him, not ask him to run. This race, he has a target. And the target was going fast, witnessed the gigantic gap between second and third. 109 and one, pretty fast for six on a track, not that quick. And he's just galloping along, looking behind him, waiting to make his move, turns for home, boom. And didn't really ask him to go that hard. Could have won by a bigger margin. And I just thought he was out of this world and is, in fact, an all-time great, whether you put him first or whatever. I don't deal with that, but he is an all-time great. He is as good as anyone I've ever seen race on the dirt in America. And if you put him in a race with all these all-time greats, I would probably bet him. So he was just that awesome and delivered. I credit Todd and his team for trying to win. Cost them money, but they did try to win the race. And the rest were just struggling along, trying to get a glimpse of these two horses that were so far in front.
Wow. I love it, Dick, and that is a great way to posit it, that you can just make an assessment about the horse in your view? And I thought that we got a very good perspective from Andy Beyer, from Andy Serling yesterday. Sid, I loved the way Sid brought out the current era of baseball and the pitch count scenario.
Yes, that's perfect.
That it just kind of shows how, you know, this game and this sport is not, you know, not alone or unique in, you know, a different fashion of, you know, execution and you know, habit and practice with your horse. And, you know, there's all different kinds of things that entered into this. I brought up, I mean, Andy didn't take the bait, but I did bring up sheep methodology with him on Monday, you know, which absolutely has influenced, you know, the current generation and even the last generation of horsemen, you know, who understood what, you know, what Thoragraph and Ragusan was implying by, you know, looking at horses' patterns, performance levels. So, you know, everybody, I really am impressed how everybody is being really respectful of and understands what we were treated to. And the one contribution I've made to the discussion, I think, is to point out that bringing a horse off of those layoff lines every single time is a feat unto itself. I mean, that he was ready to run with those, you know, with those layoff lines. You know, he didn't need second or third off the break. He was ready to beat people by a dozen lengths at a time. So, and I'm glad I brought it up with John Sather, frankly, you know, to get John's read on it. Well, I do want to summarize again what Dick did with this year. We put Dick into the At the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion, brought to you by Form to Win and Am Wager. And I just asked Dick for his overview of the turf races and, you know, meditate in the Juvie Phillies turf. But one thing you also did, Dick, that was helpful, you were one of the only people I saw that had much interest in Cairo Consort, which was big.
Yeah.
From Nathan, yeah. Nathan Squires coming down from, and congratulations to Squires to come down to the Breeders' Cup from Woodbine and get her in the money. So that was very helpful. And then when it came, we mentioned already Victoria Road and Silver Knot, and your third horse was I'm Very Busy. Both of the turf sprints tripped you up, but that's okay. Tuesday and In Italian with Nashua were the three in the Philly Mare turf. One horse that we really haven't talked much about, I tried to slip it in with Nick Luck yesterday. We covered so much ground with Nick yesterday in an hour. But Kinross, who in the immediate aftermath, Sid, Dick, in the immediate aftermath of Champions Day, Kinross felt like he was going to be, you know, he was going to come to this event with some mojo, and I don't know if it was because he drew wide, but for whatever reason, Kinross sort of evaporated as a, you know, as a now consideration, and yet he finished third at 9-1.
Well, that was a tough third. That was a tough photo.
Well, don't get me started, because I'll start carrying on about Malavath again, because that was
yes.
Torture.
Yes.
Because if they run that race 99 more times, she's going to be second or third, a bunch of them.
Yep.
She might have won one, and then also, of course, in the turf, you also. Rebel's Romance and Warlike Goddess, and for those that weave together opinions from our pundits and our regulars and guests, if you plugged into Sid, you were able to utilize his tremendous insight on Sherrill's Spite at 55-1. So, well done, Dick. Thank you.
Thank you. One thing you mentioned with the sheep methodology.
It's
analytics. So over the years, they recognize, notice, but with empirical data, that horses run fast and need time to recover. Okay. So that's affected trainers and scheduling and things like that. And that's the world we live in today. In baseball, they found that a pitcher going through a lineup the third time tends to tail off. Now, that wasn't true growing up. You didn't get Bob Gibson, Tom Seaver in the first, second inning. You're not getting them. They're going to get stronger as the game goes on. Why, I don't know. But that's not true anymore. So the analytics show, well, sixth inning, Zach Wheeler got to come out of the game, no matter how good he looks. And, you know, not good for the Phillies. So there's an analytics component to what we're doing. But when you then step back and say, well, we're going to compare this horse to that horse, it's comparing Jacob deGrom to Bob Gibson. Jacob deGrom can barely pitch 150 innings a year. His whip, his this, his that is all-time great, but he's not putting in the innings and putting in the work that people, pitchers from a couple of generations ago, were able to do. It's a tough comparison, but at least with the analytics, we can place deGrom in this strata, and if you want to compare him to the old guys, fine, but at least among the new guys, he's doing things that are just sensational. I think what Flightline's doing or did fits any generation of any horse that's ever raced. He ran 108 and 2 his first time out. I mean, a son of Tappet is that fast. Now you think, well, what's he going to do as they stretch out? Well, he's just going to get better and better and better. And Saturday, I did send a congratulatory text to Michael Dickinson, who trained Tappet, who has created this sire line. And what I love is he is American dirt. And he's, you know, Tappet and the whole pedigree is American dirt. And I was really happy to see Coolmore spend $7 million on a dirt mare. And they have said numerous times that their entire breeding operation is based on American dirt speed. And you think, well, wait a minute, they got Galileo and they got this one and they got that one. And they will tell you it's all built on American dirt speed. And so Flightline is just, I can't say enough good things about him. He does bring out reactions of people that are been around the game a long time and still get that kind of reaction. And is he going to be on the cover of this magazine? No, he's not. You just got to accept that the world's changed. And, you know, he is just in a class of his own.
You say that, and I'll bring up just a couple of anecdotes. When I'm home, I don't necessarily watch a lot of things like ESPN, but when I'm on the road like this, I do, and I have, and there's been plenty of mainstream sports coverage. And that includes mainstream medias and even things like the share purchase on Monday, and it's gotten very favorable. It's got a very favorable reception, and it does seem that when a horse like this comes along, and we had the Zenyatta Rachel scenario particularly, we get it all the time at Derby, but when the kinds of names that have been invoked here get out there that even those uninterested in the game, when they see, you know, Secretariat trending, it does seem like it piqued people's interest. And even Mike Wilbon, who is a notorious denigrator of the sport. Even Wilbon on Monday on PTI with Kornheiser, who loves the game, even Wilbon, you could tell, was kind of intrigued and impressed. Tony's the one that did the talking about flight line. But the Cody's Wish story has been, you know, well received and widely circulated. So
yes.
there's been this was I had a friend, I've got a friend that has gotten interested in the game who's in her 20s that you know said I on all my social media feeds I'm seeing lots of stuff, you know, what went on, you know, how was the Breeders' Cup? Somebody asked me on Facebook, and I, you know, so it definitely it got a little zeitgeist, you know, murmuring.
And that matters, because if you're going to say so-and-so was on the cover of Time magazine, well, who's on the cover of Time magazine now? Does Time magazine, do they even publish anymore? You know, Life, I remember Life magazine used to get delivered to the house. Wow. Not a lot of pictures. Great. Not anymore. You know, it's different, and I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, I wish it would have lasted. I wish they maybe would have delayed the retirement a little bit so that we could all bask a little bit longer instead of getting hit with the finality of retirement. But, you know, there's a lot at stake, and I don't blame them for doing the way they did it. But, he's deserving the attention he's getting. You wish it was longer lasting, and let's hope his yearlings will be in the ring whenever that is and attract even more interest. But
well, nice work, Dick. Thank you.
Well, I was very happy with the Breeders' Cup, and what I was really happy with was I got to Rebel Romance, and I said, you know, you sit here and you bet sports and you bet a decent amount of money on a team. Let's bet this horse. And I had a big win bet on him.
That was, I hope, one of the messages that came through leading up to the Cup, which was, you know, don't get caught up just in the multis, the big multis. I mean, I thought the doubles and the pick threes, and we're going to do a lot of that tomorrow when we get our annual recap from Paul Matisse about what went right, what went wrong, what lessons there are, and so forth. But, you know, we kept reiterating that you needed to, you know, kind of dial it back and bet, you know, the old-fashioned way. So, you know, there were spots. I mean, even Tuesday at over 4-1, there was nothing wrong with that. In fact, the exacta with the favorite paid 22.57. The people, the key to lead power, and even if you use Jackie's Warrior in the try, but you know, you needed help from somebody like Nick Tamaro, who suggested CZ Rocket. You know, the Cheryl Spite portion of that. Exacta, you know, here was Modern Games, who was one of the shortest prices of the weekend, and you had a $90 exacta with Cheryl Spite. So there was that Blue Stripe. If you took Mike Welch's word for it and you weaved Blue Stripe in, how about a 55-60 exacta with Malathat and a trifecta that paid the dollar try paid $280.350 with Clairier and Malathat. So if you took a hint there, you know, that Stone Age at 12-1, Stone Age boosted the exacta and try with Rebel's Romance, and of course with Nation's Pride, you know, being kind of the black hole and sucking away money certainly helped, because I mean, I personally, as like I said all week, I don't get them. I see where people made money with Olympiad at an overlay 28-1. I mean, this was just the theme of the weekend over and over again. Leave No Trace. What was wrong with Leave No Trace going into the Juvenile Fillies? You know, you had to believe in Wonder Wheel, but $150 exacta there. In fact, Seth Merrow produced that. Like I mentioned with you, Meditate was a 2-to-1 favorite. Shug, Pleasant Passage, absolutely figured as a real board hit candidate, and you offered everybody interest in Cairo Consort. I mean, this was just the theme of the weekend. You got $12 on Fort, and then Victoria Road was $13.14. So there were a lot of ways to skin a cat over the weekend. So hope everybody got something.
Well, it was that kind of weekend, and that's why, you know, you're going to run 14 Breeders' Cup races. You're going to have some of these and some of those, and just it went well. I was very happy, and then to cap it off with seeing Flightline. Wow.
That says it all. Well, like you say, 14 Breeders' Cup races. you put that many offerings out there, somebody's bound to hit something. That's like, that reminds me of Mike Damone in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You put the vibe out to a million girls, you're bound to hit something. So great. Dick, thank you so much.
All right, Steve. Thanks. Talk next week.
You got it. Dick Powell, everybody. And HK, JC, the action. Let's stay right here. We got to get Christy DeBernardis in and get our report on the sale. I'm really on the first 3 days of the sale. It really has been a treat to have stayed around, because you know, I have never done this. I mean, the September sale, which was so much fun to start with, of course, and after the tail end of Breeders' Cup, not Breeders' Cup, of Kentucky Downs, and you know, when the suggestion came about staying here and after Breeders' Cup for the sale, for both sales, I said yes, and I'm delighted I did. But Christy DeBernardis of the TDN, she does this whether the Breeders' Cup is in Kentucky or not.
That's true. That's true. It just was convenient one-stop shopping this year.
Exactly. Or you know, you didn't have to rush back from somewhere, and as so many people do. I mean, you know, when we're in California, one of the challenges, both for the humans and the horses, are getting them. The ones back to go through the ring. Although now that we've got this wacky, you know, anime version of sales horses, I guess I guess they don't have to all go on the plane anymore and rush home.
I don't know if the Bloodstock agents will agree with that, but
exactly. Hey, Christy, we'll talk about you know, book one, day one here on Monday, and the first half of book two yesterday. But let's also fold in Sunday night. You know, I had Sid with us on Monday live. But give us your impressions from Sunday night for starters.
Well, you know, Phasic is as big as it always is. It's truly the night of the stars, Steve. You know, it's always just million-dollar mare after million-dollar mare. I feel like I'd never get back to the press box. You know, and we were right at it this year. Big participation from Japan, as well as Coolmore, who obviously bought the topper, Gamine, for $7 million. And, you know, just an action-packed night, and numbers were up. Another time for them to be over the $100 million mark for the second year in a row, I believe. So the Phasic team does it again.
Ed, was there anything you noticed? And one thing that we brought up was how the weanling side of the ledger, it did seem like there was plenty of RNAs, and a sense that I don't want to say that people had unreasonable expectations or unreasonable, let's say, reserves. But what, you know, now with the benefit of another 24 hours, you know, looking back and seeing what's happened here these first 2 days at Keeneland, what's your sense about that high RNA rate on the weanlings Sunday night?
Well, you know, the weanlings are always a little hard to read, especially at Phasic November, you know, where it's more condensed. They had more weanlings than normal this year, so I think it's kind of hard to judge it against past years. because they probably had double the amount of weanlings. And I think the quality, not necessarily the quality, but what you saw in the prices of those weanlings was all over the map. They had everything from your $30,000 weanling to, you know, they did sell $1 million weanling out of the top mare. So I'm not really sure how to judge that based on past years, because like I said, it's a lot more than they've ever had there. You know, it's usually more of a focus on the mares with a limited number of weanlings, and they had just as many weanlings as mares this year.
Well, we then, the scene immediately shifted Monday right back to Keeneland and everything, you know, everything that comes with this. And this is a marathon. I mean, this goes till next Wednesday. So plenty intense. And, you know, there's obviously layers. But when, you know, when you're offering horses like, you know, Midnight Bisou and company and quite a few more of that ilk, and then you start folding in also the opportunity to buy some in foal mares and maybe do some speculating on the baby you're going to get. Give us a feel for these first two sessions on these grounds.
Well, you know, book one, the single session book one on Monday was obviously very strong. Like you said, we had Midnight Bisou carrying her second foal, who, you know, is now going to Japan. You have Shamrock Rose, who's going through a November sale for the second time, in foal to Curlin. You know, a European participant from the mile was in there, Dreamloper, the Dam of Nest. So, you know, obviously plenty of seven-figure horses going through the ring on that day. The action definitely tailed off into the second day, which is, again, typical and to be expected. But we did see $2 million horses sell yesterday, which is the first time that $1 million horses sold in book two here since, I believe, 2017.
Interesting. Well, that is interesting. And in terms of the session today, before we talk about some of the buyers and also I want you to talk about the flight line share. You wrote the story, but you know, today, let's see some other names. How about that New York bred, the McMahons, Banksting sells today, or actually sold. Take that back. Sold yesterday, right?
Yeah, coming up today, we have Belle Galanty. She's a multiple grade one winner. She's in full to a new stallion, Yao Pan. We have a sister to Jack Christopher, who actually is named Jack's my brother. we have the Dam of Cherry Wine coming through today. You know, we have several grade one producers coming through today, which should be interesting. And I think that today will be a little bit more action than we saw yesterday.
There's also been quite a number of you know, either racing or broodmare prospects today selling late. Peter Urton's trainee Sharapova, the outwork filly that I think has been out of training for pretty much the middle part of the year. Bobby Flay, who seems like Bobby Flay is doing some horse trading, right? Sold Pizza Bianca.
Actually, she RNA'd.
She did RNA.
She RNA'd for over $3 million, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I did not see that note afterward.
Yeah, she was a big RNA, and so was Belle's the One.
Well, Belle's the One we knew about because of Sid and his work with Bob Lothenback, and he's going to go ahead and you know, see her through. Interesting. What was Flay's postscript to Pizza Bianca?
You know, I did not speak with him after, but he has RNA'd mares here for that kind of money before. So, you know, I'm assuming he'll just add her to the broodmare band. Dame Dorothy RNA'd for a lot of money here in the past.
Well, and he's had this, you know, he's had this run, you know, with America and with his, you know, with the produce producing seven figure yearlings and such and 2 year old in training types. So why not? I guess right.
Exactly. You know, for him, I guess it has to be well worth it to part with a mare of that caliber as being a breeder himself. So, you know, he did buy some weanlings. I've seen his name on the results quite a bit in all different angles. So not, you know, looks like he's kind of taking a different approach than normal.
Interesting. Talk about the buyers and, you know, you mentioned Japan and certainly all three sessions from Newtown Paddock to here. All three sessions featuring strong Yoshida, Shaddai, and et cetera. There's a number of mares, and this happens every year that
yes.
You know, some of our best stock ends up heading to Japan.
Yeah, so they were very active at Phasic and at book one of Keeneland, but not really any Japanese participation yesterday. With the start of book two, the domestic buying bench really took over. MB Magner was very active during Phasic and book one. Again, he bought nothing yesterday. The topper was bought by Jane Lyon at Summer Wind, who is the breeder and part owner of Flightline, and she is collecting a few new mares with the intentions of breeding them to Flightline. Though yesterday's topper may not be going to Flightline, as both of them are out of Indian Charlie mares, so she has other stallions as well, so that's not a problem. But also, the China Horse Club was busy buying horses to mares to go to Life is Good. West Point has formed a partnership with Lane Venn, a determined stud, to buy some mares to go to Flightline and probably some other stallions as well, but obviously that's their primary focus. Mandy Pope is always very active here, so that's no surprise. The Bernhardts have purchased Pin Oak Stud, so they were extremely active yesterday buying mares for their new farm, including they bought the other million-dollar horse that sold yesterday, Sweet Sammy D, who actually was a really good score for the team at Stonehaven Settings. They claimed her off of Pat McBurney for $65,000, put her in foal to Gunrunner, and she sold for $1 million.
On the in foal portion of the equation, it's funny that I saw in the TDN takeaways that you guys picked up on a note that I mentioned even immediately on Monday, based on Sunday night, which was Charlatan. Charlatan covering mares and selling really strongly, and then that's continued over here.
Yeah, he had two pretty big sellers at Phasic, and then he's had some good sellers here, and then, you know, they were actually, three of them were featured in the Nothing But Net section that Jess did as mares that were bought for cheaper prices, put in full to Charlatan, who stands for 50, I believe, and then were selling for, you know, $200,000 and $300,000 yesterday. So that's a pretty nice return for those pinhookers.
You noted also in the takeaways, Essential Quality, the first opportunity to see Essential Quality's name as a stallion on a on a ledger, and a good first impression, it seems.
Yeah, he was the top covering sire and, first season sire. So five mares in full to him sold very well. So I expect to see that continue. Him and Charlatan were probably the big names from the new stallions as far as what we saw in the results.
Interesting. You mentioned China Horse Club. They're looking, and you know, this is a topic that is really inside baseball when it comes to the breeding game. And that is the either the farms themselves or some of the partners involved buying up mares to bring to support their stallion. And there's all different ways to go about this, and probably the most famous anecdotal way was and because I'm staying in Nicholasville and I drive through Ramsey Farm every to and from Catnip Hill Road, the Ken Ramsey system of claiming $5,000 5-year-old and 6-year-old mares to bring to Kitten's Joy, and because Kitten's Joy was able to just turn on the light switch with everything he touched, that worked. But the more conventional method is to to go out and pluck mares from various premium outfits that maybe are culls. There really aren't any notable liquidations, right? There's no dispersals going on, are there?
Not a dispersal, but there's Helen Groves. There's a lot. Gainesway's selling quite a bit of Helen Groves stock.
Yep, that's
true. I don't think they're really calling it a dispersal, but
trimming of the sales.
But yeah, there's quite a bit of her stock in here. I'm not sure if it's a full dispersal or just a just kind of lessening.
And are the Bernhardts, when it comes to Pin Oak, are they going to maintain the Pin Oak brand?
They are signing as Pin Oak Stud, so yeah, it appears so.
Oh, that's great. So that
they race under Lynn Haven Racing, so when they buy yearlings, that's what they typically sign as, but they are signing for all these mares as Pin Oak Stud.
Interesting. All right, so Mrs. Abercrombie's legacy, at least from that standpoint. Let's round out this discussion, Christy, with the story that really did people were anticipating, and then, I mean, it delivered in terms of impact and headline value and the ooh and ah factor, and that was this one of the 40 shares in Flightline. And it was interesting that, you know, most everybody going in expected, you know, knew the valuation was probably worth between $2 and $2.5 million, but that there would be a premium on this particular opportunity. And I did hear Sunday somebody said that they sat with a prominent owner breeder who predicted $4.5 million. And what were your thoughts and the aftermath of the $4.6 million share?
I don't know that anyone really knew. You know, that was the big talk all of Saturday and Sunday, is what, you know, what will this sell for? Nobody really knew where to value this horse. I think that's because we haven't seen anything quite like him. So, you know, and even his connections didn't know how to value this horse. My personal guess was that between $2.5 and $3 million. You know, and I thought a lot of it depended on whether they retired the horse or not, which obviously that announcement was made the day before. You know, if there's a potential to make another $10 million in purses as well as his stud value, that changes the game a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I've never seen the pavilion so packed. The rule here was that you had to bid from inside the pavilion, where typically you can bid from outback or inside the pavilion. So the pavilion was lined wall to wall. There was barely a seat in the house. I could barely get up into the press box. And people were in every imaginable space that they could find to view this, you know, first of its kind event. I will say, seeing the cartoon Metaverse flight line with no halter and no handler was quite interesting. you know, everybody's question now is, who is this mystery buyer? And I think that we were all pretty shocked to see Fred Seitz signing the ticket, as it's, you know, unusual for Brookdale to sign such a big ticket. We were all expecting the likes of Comore or Mandy or maybe even one of the Flightline partners trying to get an extra share or two. So that was pretty surprising. And then, you know, Fred was unable to disclose his buyer, but said it was a longtime client who has a handful of mares. I assume we'll see him buying some more mares this week. but yeah, I think everybody, you know, everybody was pretty surprised. No one knew where to value the horse at, but I am not surprised, you know, for it to come to that, to be almost double what my original prediction was. And that puts the horse's full valuation at $184 million, which is the most ever for Stallion.
And Sid addressed this with us on Monday, and I'm going to actually reach out to Sid for a postscript, but that is only going to come to pass or flesh out based on the determination what Lane's End ends up, you know, putting his fee at.
I mean, Well, I think, you know, it also just puts a value on the horse going forward. And not that they're ever going to sell him, but
right,
should something like that happen, you know, ever be decided, I think it gives them somewhere to go. But I'm sure, you know, Bill Farish said that it wouldn't much affect the stud fee. I'm sure it will a little bit. Give them an idea. I'm sure they had a range in mind, and, you know, maybe this will help them decide what side of the range to be on.
Well, you would think, I mean, the number, the early number, you know, pre-Breeders' Cup had been in the 150 to 2 range. Then after, in the immediate aftermath, 200 was the number that kept getting kicked around. And then after this, on Monday, you know, suddenly speculation said, could it even be, you know, from 2.25, 250 or above? So you know, it's interesting also that as this conversation is going on abroad, here's Dubawi with, you know, a stratospheric fee as well that came to market yesterday. So it's fascinating, and it continues, Christy, that, you know, that the marketplace, that, you know, that the bloodstock trade is healthy. And you know, we were worried for the longest time about the middle market. That seems to have tightened up over the last couple of years. The demand for racehorses through the yearling season was at an absolute, you know, fever pitch, and even the weanlings, you can see that people are doing some advanced planning by trying to get out in front of weanlings. I mean, this is the you know, that's even a portion of the equation. So
Well, I think the yearling market is so exceptionally strong that you have some end users, like you said, trying to get ahead of it and get these horses as weanlings, hoping that it's less competitive. And I've also seen, like, Randy Hartley and Dean Dorenzo, who are typically yearling to two-year-old pinhookers. They bought quite a few expensive horses, specifically gunrunners, at Phasic with the intention of bringing them back in yearling sales. He said the yearling market's so strong, he's not going to wait for the two-year-olds. He's going to try to get these horses pinhooked as yearlings, and, you know, he's spending $500,000 and $600,000 to do it. So clearly he expects quite a big return going forward. That's a big number to buy a pinhook at.
There you go. Well, Christy DeBernardis, you and Jess, you guys are working the hill for the next week.
Yep, we are here. I am here through Saturday, and Jess is here through Friday. And then we will cover the rest from the home office.
All right, there you go. Well, I really appreciate it. Great job, as always. The whole team, everybody pitched in this Breeders' Cup cycle for TDN, and there was just a parade of great information from every side of things, you know, stories, and now the bloodstock side thing, that sidebars that pop up when we get to this side of it. So well done to everybody on the team, and those that also chip in here and there, like Christina Basanakis and Steve Chirac, and you name it, everybody, my man.
Yeah, it's definitely a team effort.
Big time. Joe Bianca. Joe did a nice piece on Arrogate that was, I thought was terrific, and he helped our listeners with a terrific, the $700 trifecta in the turf. So TDN people helping helping your understanding and helping you cash tickets as well. Christy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
Christy DeBernardis, everybody, and the Thoroughbred Daily News. Let's do this. Let's take our top of the hour break. We're a couple of minutes in. We are going to visit later, hour three today. Hour three, we'll get a visit in with Drew Cotney, who is your BCBC winner. Haven't had a chance these first 2 days with everything we've been doing. Haven't had a chance. I circulated the leaderboard on Sunday night, I think on Sunday night or Sunday morning, whenever, or even Saturday night. I kind of lost track. But Drew, with a mammoth punch, all in. It was literally chips in on flight line. And we'll talk about how he got up, I think, to 70,000 and had to make a decision. And ends up making the right decision, the right play. And we'll get the top finishers out to you and talk about the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And as I mentioned, tomorrow, we'll be at Churchill tomorrow. And at Churchill, not that Paul will be here, but we will talk to Paul Matisse tomorrow and do our annual dissection of Breeders' Cup and what went right, what went wrong, what decisions what hints did you have that you could have made differently? So we'll do our annual visit with Paul. I think we've got arrangements made for Friday for a live show, even though I will be, I have to go down to Boca Raton for a funeral. So I didn't want to shortchange you on the weekend because there's just still so much to take in. All right, Case, let's take the first break of the morning. We'll come back. I am gonna reach out to Sid for a second and just get his quick reaction after he did such a great job explaining the flight line share to you on Monday. I do want to see what aftermath thoughts he's got and what else he might have heard after Monday and that result. All right, he went back yesterday. Drew's going to join us at the top of hour three at 11. So Seth after that, Seth Merrow. We also have to get the Popo. I didn't yesterday, of course, we filled out that third hour, and I didn't get a chance to get Popo's take. And there were some very good looks from Form to Win. Absolutely work. So we'll talk to Popo if he's available. Popo, if you're listening, let me know. Plenty more to do. Garrett O'Rourke. Got to get Garrett. I think he's going to be available after Sid as well. All right. What else? Yeah, that's it. I'm still chasing Todd. Got to get Todd in after his excellent after his excellent cup. All right? All right. That's it. Take a break. Come right back. I'm going to see if I can't scare up a cup of coffee. All right. At the races. Sirius XM Day 3 weekend recapping. Breeders' Cup weekend. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing...